on the sides of a beached cart, above the lintel of the post office, on placards scattered throughout the surrounding mountains praising dear leader Kim Jong-il. And in the grain sack strapped to the oldest brother Wonchon's back, their crippled sister, the weight of a few books. The younger brother Chechol ran ahead, like a child, Wonchon thought, frowning, though he too was still a child, an 11-year-old boy with a body withered on 2 years of boiled tree bark, mashed roots, the occasional grilled rat and fried crickets on a stick. Human. No one knew anymore, though they pretended to. "She's slowing us down," Chechol said as he circled back, his whine like a roomful of lost children. "We'll be dead before we reach China." "Shut up," Wonchon tied his brother's laces in symmetrical bows. For younger children obeyed the older one, who obeyed the mother, who obeyed the father, who obeyed the dear leader. For the school textbook stated that a swallow had descended from heaven at the dear leader's birth. Trees bloomed and snow melted in the dear leader's presence. He stubbornly ignored the salmon fishery and the town's vegetable gardens that the soldiers guarded, shooting intruders on sight. For there was an order to everything, or there used to be. Still, he soldiered his siblings up the mountain slope of granite and bare spectral trees with the assurance of an oldest son. So certain he didn't slow, though his legs shook under her slight weight. The Tumen River to China would be frozen for crossing, and he felt ready to make the necessary sacrifices. Chechol walked ahead, his nose close to the ground as he looked for acorns. He passed one near his shoe. Wonchon picked it up and waited until his brother was deep in the forest before he set his sister on a hillock of granite. While he struck the nut against a rock, she watched with the expectancy of someone who knew she was loved. And he fulfilled his promise, peeling the wooden skin back a thin strip at a time. The acorn's meat wrinkled and gray, the size of a rat's brain. He broke it into nearly perfect thirds, and into her waiting, open mouth, fed Kuka the largest chunk. His hands were shaking. It was good, without insects. "Oppa, where are birds?" Kuka said, her breath a sick hiss. "You pabo, it's too cold for birds." He was angry because she still trusted him. Then he remembered her thirst and scooped up snow, which she licked off his palm. "Oppa, it hurts." She stuck her frozen, yellowed tongue out for inspection. "Oppa," she said again and smiled a little, as if the words "older brother" were a song she liked to sing. He cleaned her face with his mittens, softly scraped under her fingernails with pine needles. Reminded himself again how impossible it was to carry her on the long walk to China. Then he closed his eyes, twisted their mother's scarf around Kuka's neck, and choked her. It was better this way, he was convinced, than to leave her afraid, starving slowly to death. He did not let go until she stopped moving.